The second Aliyah of Parshas Mishpatim brings us many dinim that reflect a certain balance between action and consequence and steps in between. And the first psukim tell us about somebody who is striking his slave with a rod and brings about his death. And the Torah distinguishes between whether there is an immediate death or whether the individual lingers for a day or two, in which case there isn't a consequence of Misa. And the Mefarshim explain that this is something which could have started as an act of discipline, but if indeed it brings about immediate death, this is a reflection of the fact that it happened with tremendous cruelty and also in a rage, which deserves a consequence, which the Torah identifies as nekama. The Rambam explains in Hilchos Rotzeach that if the individual used a knife or a sword, a tool that is meant for killing, so then he's chayiv misa, even if it does take a few days, and the whole distinction is specifically with a stick, in which there can be different calibrations and different types of usage. The Kotzker Rebbe points out also that if he kills with a killing strike, so then that shows that he is being mafkir, the Eved, and he doesn't have that status of being his Eved anymore anyway, and therefore this consequence is appropriate. We are also told in this Aliyah about a miscarriage that happens because of a fight between men, and the consequence of that is a monetary consequence, and this is invoked in the major debate among poskim as to what exactly is the nature of the issur of abortion. There are those who understood it to be a type of ritzicha. Others point out that it doesn't sound like that from this context, in which we find the consequences to be monetary in nature. There are some who understand that's because it is some aspect of ritzicha, whether perhaps understood as a chatzi shir of ritzicha, an incomplete act of ritzicha. The Arya de Be'iloi understood it to be a prohibition of being the ma'id, the dmus of reducing God's image in this world. So some understand it to be a type of ritzicha that doesn't have all of the details that should bring about the full consequences, and therefore doesn't have a punishment of misa, and is permitted in situations of pikuach nefesh. The Rambam's language is that saving the mother at the expense of the Vlad is because the Vlad is kirodef, is acting like a pursuer. Some, like Reb Chaim Brisker, understand that to mean that the Rambam sees this as an act of ritzicha that can only be justified by invoking the concept of rodef. Many also understood it differently. Other theories of the prohibition include the possibility of chavala, of wounding, or that it is one of a range of prohibitions that involve a negation of the obligation of puravu. We also find in this Aliyah the notion of ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, which some have used to attack the Torah, presenting it as overly harsh and vengeful. However, Chazal tell us that this does not actually mean that an eye should be taken from someone who causes another to lose an eye, but rather this means monetary compensation. And the Rambam in Hilchos Chovil in Parak Aleph Halacha Vav explains that even though this seems to be a drasha of Chazal, this is actually a halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. This is a tradition that we had, that this is indeed the rule. The Torah Tamim explains that he says that because it's not clear at all how this can be derived specifically from the Pasuk, so therefore it can only be a remez for the halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. However, he does add that because of the theme of Drachei Darchei Noam, so we know that it wouldn't make sense that there should be an onesh that wouldn't in any way help the victim, and therefore this is the more likely interpretation. The Ramban quotes from the Ibn Ezra that the reason the Torah phrases this way, if indeed that's not actually the consequence, is to show us that on some level this individual does deserve to lose an eye because of what he inflicted on someone else, and this is happening in its stead. The next pasuk continues, kviya tachas kviya, petza tachas patza, chabura tachas chabura. All of these different types of injuries have a similar consequence, and the Gemara Bava Kamma Daf Chavav Midbeis tells us that this is also to reflect that there is an obligation for a shogeg like a mezid and onus like a ratzon, that even one who inflicts these wounds inadvertently and without intent is also liable. And Tosfos quoted by the Rama notes that this is not an absolute principle, that if the damager did so onus gomer, if he was completely not in control, then indeed he would be exempt. The Shach comments that the Rama should have written Yesh Omrim, that this is an opinion, but that others disagree, because it doesn't seem like the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch agree with this exclusion. However, the Torah Tumimah suggests that the reason the Rama said this is because the language of the Gemara, which talks about Shogeg and Mezid, and then Onus and Ratzon together, is to compare Onus to Shogeg in this sense, and that a Shogeg is someone who didn't do the action on purpose, but could have known better. And therefore, bringing Onus in conjunction with that means that it is an Onus that is close to Shogeg, in the sense that there was some degree of liability or some degree of responsibility in the damage. But if there was no responsibility whatsoever, if there was no possibility to have controlled the situation, then perhaps the message is that there should be an exemption. The idea of obligating somebody who is some degree of shogeg or ones, in contrast with other situations where one is normally exempt for an onesh under those circumstances, is to convey, presumably, that the liability here is not because of the avera, which is what we would normally understand with a punishment, but rather it's because of the responsibility that one has to make up for the damages, and it's not fair that the victim should have to bear that burden, so one who has any degree of liability, it gets shifted to him. In Pasuk Chavav, we read about one who hits his eved and knocks out his eye or his tooth, and here we find that the eved goes free because of that. The Gemara Maseches Gittin and Daf Yud Gimel has a machlokes whether it is good or bad for an eved to be set free, whether he would perhaps prefer this lifestyle. And the Rashash writes that if it's bad for the eved to be set free, so this would seem to be a punishment for the victim. So he understands that certainly in this situation where you have a adon who treats the eved in such a fashion, then it certainly is a schus, it certainly is a benefit for the eved to be freed from that situation. And the Olam Moshe quotes the Darchei Torah, that the Torah goes to the real will of a person, even if a particular Eved might think he prefers the hefkeris of slavery. The real schus, the real merit is freedom, and therefore we assume that as a given. Pasuk Chav Ches tells us about the punishment of death for a shor that gores a person. And here there is a major discussion as to the idea of punishments for animals. The Ramban in Parshas Noach questions the idea of whether there is really a concept of an onesh for an animal or a reward for an animal, or is this simply a gzeiras hakasev, which doesn't necessarily reflect that that's actually what happens. The Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim takes it as a given that there is no such concept of schar, an onesh for animals who are not bali bechira, who don't have the free will to make decisions that should justify reward or punishment. In the Sefer Otzeh Plos HaTorah, he notes that there are many psukim and chumash which do seem to reflect an idea of reward for animals, such as giving an avela to a dog, etc., etc., in many other such contexts. And he quotes the Malbim to explain that this doesn't really mean that we're assuming merit or guilt for animals that should correspond to reward or punishment, but this is helping us to appreciate how human beings should be treated, and therefore we have halachos that reflect that kind of a concept. Pasuk Lamed Gimel tells us about the liability one has for creating a pit, Bereshus Harabim, and bringing about damage because of this. The Gemara tells us that this is an unusual type of liability. Normally, when it comes to Nezikin, one is liable for the damage that's caused by his property. In this case, when it comes to a Bor Bereshus Harabim, the liability is not connected to that, as the individual does not actually own this Bor. And this is a distinct type where the liability comes not because of ownership, but rather because of authorship, because of creating the Sakana. Rav Schechter often notes that the language of this pasuk was invoked in a different context. Chazal tell us that the status of a judge in every generation is considered to be as authoritative as a judge in any other generation, even if they're not on the same level, using the expression Yiftach Bidaro, Kishmuel Bidaro, that Yiftach was just as authoritative as Shmuel, despite their differences in stature. But they would add that, nonetheless, there has to be at least a base level of competence, that we assume that we're dealing with Talmid Chachamim. Chachamim, and they would use the language of this pasuk, v'ki yiftach ishbor, so was yiftach an ignoramus? Certainly not. He was at least a Talmud Chacham of some level, and that's also required in order to establish that degree of authority. In general, there was a major discussion in Achronim as to the prohibition associated with Nezikin. The Torah in this week's Parsha describes the liabilities associated with Nezikin, but doesn't make it clear that there is a prohibition. There are a number of theories as to what the prohibition is, as most assume that there certainly is a prohibition to intentionally damage someone else's property. It could be that that's presented separately from the liability in order to show, as we saw in the context of Chabalah, that the liability is not a consequence only of intentional transgression, but of irresponsibility. And Baruch Ber, in the Berakhah Shmuel, points to Pasuk Lamed Vav here, the language of V'lo Yishmerenu Balav, that the neglect of the responsibility to protect his property from causing damage to anyone else is itself the source of liability here. We also find here in this Aliyah the consequences for stealing. In one case, if one steals a shor or a seh and also slaughters it or sells it, tavach u'machar, so then there is a consequence of 4 or 5 times the value, that for an ox one has to pay 5 times as much, and for a seh one has to pay 4 times as much. And if one steals anything and is caught with a stolen property, so then one is obligated to pay kefil, twice the value. And there are two different tracks of explanations as to why these differences exist. The Gemara suggests, as far as the difference between a shor and a seh, that the lower rate for a seh, only 4 times instead of 5 times, is a reflection of the value of kavod habrios, that the one who stole the seh is going to have to carry it, as opposed to the shor that he can lead, and therefore he puts himself in an undignified position, and he gets to have a reduction in the rate because of the embarrassment that he undergoes in the very process of stealing, which is a fascinating idea. And when it comes to the difference between Gezel and Geneva, as far as the imposition of kefel, that if one steals something openly, he has to return the item itself, and if one steals something in a sneaky fashion, Geneva, so it's in that context that we have the consequence of kefel. So Chazal explained that there is a added consequence for the ganav, because he is afraid of people enough so that he hides what he's doing, but is not afraid of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore that additional offense is the cause of this additional consequence. The Rambam in his Maror Nevuchim has a different track of explanations for both of these distinctions, and all of it goes to economic theory as far as disincentivizing crime, and how far do we have to go to disincentivize crime. So the difference between Gezel and Geneva as far as Kefil, he explains that Geneva needs a greater disincentive than Gezel, because Gezel happens in the open, and one who's going to do so is not going to be able to live a normal life among people, because everyone's going to know what he did. While a ganav is able to continue to live among people because he does so in a secret fashion and people aren't aware of what he's doing. So therefore, that requires an extra disincentive, and the double payment, the kefel, is in order to provide that disincentive. Continuing that theme of disincentive, he explains that there is a far greater consequence for stealing an animal than for stealing property, because property can be hidden away in a safe, and it's much harder to steal. But animals have to graze farther away from the land of the owner, and therefore are far more vulnerable. So there needs to be a greater disincentive in order to stop that from happening. And the shor grazes farther away from the seh, so therefore it's even more vulnerable, so there needs to be a even greater rate of punishment in order to disincentivize that activity. One way or another, the halachos here in this aliyah and throughout the parsha are fascinating examples of the way the Torah regulates our behavior and our actions through the imposition of consequences of different natures.